Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
LeBron James with no regard for human life. Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
Bang! Iverson against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What's good, everybody? Nick Engvall here, back with another episode of the show. This is going to be an interesting one if you're into sneakers or if you're the creative type, let's say, because my guest today is kind of fulfilling dreams that a lot of, let's say, sneaker creators might have. So we've talked to him before on the show. You probably know him very well. I've got Andy, aka AD Sneaks, on the show with me to talk about his new book. Andy, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back on to talk about your book with me, man. How's it going?
Good, man. Thanks for having me back on, Nick. So it's book is exciting. Like, it's cool. Won't get too much into it, but I mean, anybody who has like an itch or an eye for photography, anytime you see it in printed form, it's different.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So let's get the details out of the way for everybody. First and foremost, this episode might be a little bit different than what you're used to on the show because I'm kind of going to do this in two ways. The first half of the show is going to be about Andy's kind of sneaker world that he's created with Instagram and his storytelling. And then the latter half of the show will be a little bit more in the weeds. So if you're a creative type, you'll want to listen to that half of the show maybe a little bit more. And if you're just a sneaker consumer and you're not out there putting content out there, then you might make it halfway through this episode. But I wanted to kind of give both sides of this because I come from the same similar place of doing both things, right? Like, I'm obviously a big sneakerhead, but I've been working and creating in the sneaker space for 20 years now. So it's kind of like, you know, it's an interesting balance for me to kind of see all of these things come together. And I think it's been really exciting for you to watch you rather turn your, you know, daily sneaker photo classroom kicks, you know, evolution into this much bigger entity that you've been working on. So tell everybody about the book, when it comes out, and then we'll get into some questions about how you got there.
For sure. So the book, it's a coffee table photo book. I'm not a writer, so yeah, we didn't write a novel or anything here. So coffee table photo book is some of my favorite photos, called The Art of the Sneaker. I got links to it on my social media feed. So if you follow me, you can check those out in my bios. But it's officially releasing March 24th of this year. Pre-orders are open now, though.
Cool. Yeah, man, it's super exciting. I mean, I think I could probably say this on behalf of most of the sneaker community that follows you already. Like, it seems kind of like an obvious thing for this to happen for you because you're so good at the photography side of it. And, you know, we've kind of like all collectively with Instagram come closer together, but like there's less of us spread out, if that makes sense. Like, you know, I've seen you highlighted in so many places over the years, you know, your interviews on other podcasts, you know, Complex doing features on you. For me, talking to you the first time around, you know, with Aaron, just to talk about education and what sneakers can be to that is really important because I come from a family of educators. And, you know, it's part of what I still try to do in the writing sense with my newsletter and stuff is like really kind of make people think about what's behind that shoe, what's behind the storytelling, the people that are behind it. Watching your photography over the years too, we talked about something similar on our first conversation on that podcast, but you posted something recently kind of showing how messy it is behind you in the background. And that kind of transparency, like, I was like, this guy is total teacher, man. Like, this is like exactly what has to happen when you're really trying to get people to understand, because, you know, we put these, you know, like, you've got this perfect little view behind you on the podcast if you're watching it and it sounds all good because we got the nice mics or whatever. We've edited it all properly. But like, my space is a total mess right now. You know, like, it's just like, I've got like, I've been taking pictures. So I've got like stuff laid out for photos. I've got stuff off the wall, stuff on the wall that's not supposed to be up there. You know, just like, I saw that and I was like, man, like, this is, I appreciate that you said that because sometimes I'm sure you feel it too, even as, you know, let's say successful as you've been with your social stuff. Sometimes it feels like you're just always putting this like best foot forward and like that just isn't, that's not every day, you know, and no. I admire that about it. So Talk a little bit about that, because, you know, obviously your photos are on the very high end of like the way I think brands and just consumers love to see the presentation that you put together. And by the time you've cut, you know, lit it perfectly, taken that photo and published it, it's much different than probably what it looks like to get you to that point.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And thank you for that, too, because like, I don't know, I feel like in today's world, like, we went through a time on social media where everyone was seeing all of this like super polished stuff. It's like, man, that person's life is just perfect. Yeah. You know, like that's all we would see. That's all we consume. You still see that on social media now, but that's not reality, right? Like,
yeah,
all of us, we do our best with what we have. And like, that's, I mean, that's kind of how it's always been in my life. Is just do your best with what you have. My studio setup isn't anything spectacular. Like I don't have, you know, a million of these nice fancy lights. I got nothing hanging from the ceiling. Like it's not a professional space at all, but you adapt and you use what tools you have available to you and you can create whatever you want in that respect. And so, I mean, I think that kind of comes from like, I don't know, teaching, because in a public school, like I've been teaching for 13 years and I've been teaching all sorts of like creative classes. And mainly I teach like digital media, but we're limited a lot of times to like either the computers are super old or the software could be old or things aren't that way. But even if things aren't like state of the art, it doesn't mean that you can't create things and can't share your vision of something in some way. So I think, yeah, a lot of the mentality that I try to give to my students is just like, create something that you love. Like, and if you love something, just try. Like trying is cool. And so that's kind of how photography has been. If I have an idea, I'll try to do it. If it doesn't turn out great, oh well, like then the wheels start keep turning and I figure out something else and or how to like solve that problem. It's just enjoy the process.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's so relatable too, as I think, especially just the way that we've all, like you said, social media became this like perfect image for so many years. And it almost feels like we're kind of moving back to a more transparent, authentic situation. I don't know if the platforms themselves are, but as human beings, we're like seeking that a little bit more, maybe.
For sure.
But with kids, especially, you know, like I have a nephew. I have a few nieces and nephews, but I don't want to call any of them out specifically. But like, they have the tendency to not. They want to look cool so bad that they almost will stop themselves from trying so many things that could absolutely change the direction of their life. You know, they might find that thing that they really love. And so that, you know, trying is cool is a really important takeaway, I think, from what you do and seeing this kind of parallel that the you know, not being an educator, not being in a classroom, but I'm sure you see that on a regular basis. The effects of social media within the classroom probably are very obvious to you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you see kids that are, you know, influenced by what they see online. And a lot of times they try to, you know, mimic what they see online. And it's not until they like realize that they're their own like person, they have their own thoughts, they have their own identity, style, what have you. And in order for them to unlock that, again, they have to just like take a few leaps into the unknown, I guess, if you will. Like you have to try things and you have to experiment, because the only way that like you progress towards something that you really want or discovering yourself or whatever it is trying, failing, learning from those failures. And I think that facade of social media where everything just looks kind of perfect and we don't see people's failures as often because nobody wants to share that, because that's vulnerable. And people think when you're vulnerable, people are going to be like, oh, haha, look at you, you know? Everyone fails at everything. Nobody's perfect. So just got to embrace that in a creative aspect and just have fun, man. I mean, that's why we're all in this, like even in sneakers in general, like some people can take it so seriously.
Yeah.
It's like sneakers are supposed to be fun. Like what got you into it in the first place? You know, like those kinds of things, those things that we hold on to, those feelings we get when we get a pair we haven't had for a while, or we've been chasing down a grail, like those feelings, that's fun. That's enjoyable. And like, that's just something that doesn't need to get lost. And I feel like needs to get amplified is the fun in sneakers.
Yeah, totally agree, man. It is definitely something that I think, you know, I've had conversations with people, you know, for the last few years, even kind of reiterating that, right? Because, you know, I've been a part of both the big community sides and also the big business sides of it. And you see kind of the, you know, the push and pull of that that exists, right? Like the businesses can't exist without the community. The community grows and provides opportunities for people within the community because of the business's interests. And that's always kind of a back and forth, and it'll always be a tough thing to maintain. And I think people ebb and flow out of their kind of passion for it. But to your point, having fun, you know, having conversations with guys like you that are doing cool stuff out there, and my crew of the Sneaker History guys, you know, just the laughs that we have. I mean, I can't remember the last time we asked each other what shoes we were wearing. You know? Right. It's not even about sneakers at this point. We just have gotten so close as friends. But I guess, like, let's talk a little bit about your origin story for those that maybe haven't heard the previous episodes. But, like, how did you get into sneakers on a personal level? And then, you know, what kind of started the classroom kicks and the photography? You know, like, you kind of obviously have like a really unique perspective and angle that you've kind of created here in the sneaker world and the community of sneakerheads and stuff. But tell us how you got into it.
For sure. So me as a kid, like, I grew up in rural Idaho, so I'm not really known for sneaker culture or anything like that. But I loved basketball growing up. And at that time, I mean, that was late 90s, early 2000s, great time for like Jordans, Nike, like everything was like, at least, I mean, as a kid, we always look back and it's just like, that was peak, you know?
Yeah.
But that was when I first started getting interested in shoes, is because I wanted to play better on the court. I thought the shoes would make me play better on the court. I saw like teammates or other players wearing shoes like, oh, those are the Answer 4s. I wish I had those. Or like, oh man, like I remember playing in a pair of like Nike Jet Flights, like the pair that Steve Nash used to play in when, yep, he played for the Mavericks. Like, still love that shoe. But like, that caught my attention with footwear. And then it was always exciting for me after the basketball season was over, because I got to wear my basketball shoe, which was the nicest shoe that I owned, to school. And I was like, ah, you know, you feel good when you get to wear a pair of shoes, even though they're beat up from the basketball season, I still thought they were cool.
Yeah.
And that feeling kind of just stuck with me. And then I would save up my money to try and like get a pair on the side, because my parents would only get me like, you know, one pair of shoes for the school year and get me a pair for the basketball season. And so if there was ever anything I wanted outside of that, it was my responsibility to save up and get that. So, you know, East Bay Magazine era, you know, when Slam Kicks was popping off, and you see some of those early magazine covers, like with Darius Miles, Quentin Richardson, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So then it was established pretty early as a kid, but then as you get older, like out of high school, you know, you're broke, going to college. I couldn't buy anything because, you know, priorities in life, but I still admired from afar, still tried to keep up with it as much as I could. But then after college, getting into teaching, still not great financially because, you know, first year teachers, we don't make a ton of money. I would get stuff here and there, and I would wear it to the classroom, but it wasn't anything great. It was like an outlet find here and there, and, you know, stuff that I wanted to wear. It really just started to evolve because as I started teaching and wearing more of like my sneakers to class, instead of dressing more like shirt and tie, you know, and all of that, I just started wearing like what I would normally casually wear. And, you know, kids would say something like, oh, yo, I like your shoes, or, oh, I like your hat, or, oh, I like this. And it was just conversation starters with the kids, just because I felt like, you know, they had something to relate to. It was like, oh, my teacher likes something that I like. And, you know, that was pretty cool to see. And I think it's a cool thing when, like, you can be yourself in front of your students and your students just, like, buy into that instantly, because they can see through, like, the fake, like, teacher energy that, you know, you give off.
Yeah.
So I was just like, nah, we're just going to be myself all the time in the classroom. And then it's worked, and, you know, built a lot of fun, positive relationships with kids over the years because of that. And the whole like social media side of everything, I mean, I didn't really care too much about it. I would follow stuff and I'd see stuff online, but I never really had a desire to post or share, just, you know, consume what other people are doing. But it was all during COVID when, you know, I feel like a lot of good things came from the pandemic creatively for people. Like a lot of people, yeah, I got started because of the pandemic. You know, we're all hunkered down, forced to be inside, and didn't really have a lot of, like, there's a lot of uncertainty. So we just kind of stayed with our people and, you know, focused on ourselves there for a minute. And that's kind of how I got my start. Photography's been something that I've enjoyed since my wife and I started having kids. I wanted to get a camera, document their lives and do all that stuff. But then the photography and the sneaker stuff just kind of, you know, merged together over COVID because I was like, man, I'm bored. I can't get out and like take pictures of like, you know, where we live here in Utah with all the pretty mountains and stuff and do things with my family. So I was like, I still want to take pictures. So, you know, scrolling on social media, seeing people post their stuff online, they're on foot pics of the day and like all that stuff. And then I tried to figure out how to like position my camera to do stuff like that and just share and engage with people just as a way of connecting because we desperately wanted to connect with people.
Yeah.
During that time. So that's what got it started. And then I just had a lot of fun doing that and gradually just tried to, you know, step things up here and there. I always looked at like all these boutiques with their, you know, their beautiful imagery that they would show online. And I was like, man, that's really cool. I want to figure out how to do that. So over time, I started buying like the paper backdrops and getting the lighting and just experimenting around and figuring stuff out with, you know, the limited tools that I had. And then watching a lot of YouTube videos of how to, you know, do stuff with my camera or do stuff in Photoshop. And it was just a fun like process of just learning how to do those things to create. And, you know, and it's still going on to this day where I just have an idea or I see something like, oh, that's cool, but what if we tried this or this or this? And then, you know, just let the juices flow a little bit.
Yeah, man, I love it. What can people expect in the book when it comes to your photography? Obviously, depending on how long people have followed you, I'm assuming they're going to see some of the stuff they've seen on social media because you've got some great ones out there that deserve to be in a book, in a coffee table book, for especially. Sure. But how did you kind of think about like that aspect of tying that together for the book?
Man, that was hard because when I was working with the publishing company, they gave me a set number of photos that they wanted to include in the book. And I have all of my stuff saved on hard drives and like Google Drive and all this stuff. I was like, man, there's so many pictures to choose from. How do I pick? So I just tried to pick a good variety of ones that like I personally had fun taking and ones that I personally thought just looked the coolest. So it might not be like of like the coolest shoe in the world or the coolest photo to someone in the world, but like I thought it was cool. So that's why I put it in the book because I thought it was cool. There's definitely some pairs in there that are like more sentimental pairs, stuff that, you know, is a little bit more personal to me. Like one of my all-time favorite shoes is the Laney Jordan 5 because that was like one of my first loves of Jordans back in the day. And so I have that one in there because, you know, that one was special. I hunted down the 2000 pair a couple years ago, got it soul swapped, was wearing it. And then the cages start falling off and I was like, all right, maybe it's just time to give it up. But then now I have it like, actually, I have the one here in my room. I keep it in here and then I got Tinker to sign it too. So awesome. It's like full circle moment. Like cages are still like, I mean, they're flapping, but the soul's good. Not going to wear them. They got Tinker's signature. So they're a showpiece now. But yeah, stuff like that will be in the book too, just because, you know, it's personal to me and it's something that I tried to portray through photography.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. I forgot, like, I think you might have just posted about it again, but like you went up to the gathering or whatever that is called. I just talked to, I don't know if you got to talk with them because the group has gotten bigger over the last couple of years, but I was able to go to that last summer. Wait, the summer before last, 2024, okay. I was able to go to that.
Okay.
And I'm curious if you had a similar experience because talking to JT, the sneaker savant, about it, his first trip was this summer in 2025. I guess that's still last summer.
Yeah.
But it, to your point about like kind of the way social media is like, you know, the packaged best of everything, I think sneakers as a whole has kind of gotten a little bit of a bad rap, or there's a little bit of a distaste or distrust with just the, you know, I'm generalizing about the whole sneaker thing, right? But for me, you know, I've always had pretty close friends that have been into sneakers. So like, I never feel that personally because I've always either worked in it or I've had close friends that are working in it. So it's like, it never slows down. It's just, it isn't a topic amongst our conversation. But going to that event for me was like, it was like the best recharge I could have possibly imagined because it was like, I'm standing in a room with, you know, 30 or 40 people that are obsessed with sneakers the way I am, that just like want to like collect or tell these stories or photograph or, you know, make people doing YouTube videos. And at the same time, it's like, you know, Wilson and Tinker and Aaron Cooper. And like, there's all these people in the room where you're like, these are people that I never thought I would ever get to stand next to, let alone have conversations with and like have a meal with. You know, it was just such a crazy experience to me. And I, you know, I was telling JT, I wish that everybody could have a similar experience to that, because it's such a powerful thing to like be reminded of why people love this stuff and the community behind it and the stories that people have, you know, around it. And I wonder, you kind of coming into the social media side, you know, I guess later in the grand scheme of sneakers, because mm-hmm. obviously like there's kind of like eras of booms for sneakers. There's like the times that like, you know, the 2008, 2009 stuff where it was like a big deal and like kind of grew a little bit for a few years and then kind of slowed a little, then grew again. And each time for me has been like awesome because I get to meet new people and new creative people come in like yourself, you know, and like we're forced to find each other through these algorithms now. So it's even harder to go back. We don't have the same, you know, Nike Talk or Soul Collector or East Bay, you know, like kind of connections that we could all kind of find our people through. And now it's like the finding of people is really difficult because I'm sure like, you know, we have maybe, you know, 100,000 on Instagram or whatever. And it's so hard to keep up with all the messages, you know, it's like, yeah. I can't imagine what it's like for guys like you or the people that have like, you know, hundreds or millions of followers or whatever. But like the community aspect of that experience was like such a wow factor for me. And I don't know if it was just the contrast of coming off of COVID or whatever. So I'm curious how your experience was with it.
No, I thought it was great. So I went summer 25, so this last August. And I mean, it's cool because like I didn't know what to expect, but like you go, like, it's not very often that you get to like go into a room with people and like, you don't have to do like the small talk stuff. It's like, I don't know many of these people here, but like, you just hit it off right away because like, it's, oh, you're interested in sneakers. And then it's like, you just get to talking and then through sneakers, you learn more about other people. And I think that's been one of the coolest things for me, even outside of the gathering, is just how sneakers have like fostered relationships with people. I mean, online's great. You're able to meet people and interact with people online, but being able to like get offline and interact with people and talk with people and build those friendships, those relationships through a common interest in sneakers, like it's beautiful, right? Like that's humanity, right? Yeah. Like you connect with other people and you develop these relationships, and it's just, it is recharging because you're able to, you know, other people resonate with what you resonate with, and then everybody resonates together and everybody just feels good about it in the end. And it's a cool thing. And I think like online, I know some people, you know, given, at least on Twitter, given the gathering kind of a bad rap, like it's this secret meeting of people going to Nike and doing all this stuff. It's like, nah, it's just a group of friends like getting together and hanging out and talking sneakers. And it just so happens that in that group of friends are some of these like, you know, higher profile designers that used to work with Nike and still have connects with them. And
yeah,
you know, it's just cool because if you break down those walls of like status or of like these positions within these companies, we all love the same thing. And it's just cool to connect with people on that level and take all of those like labels and like status stuff and just put it to the side.
Yeah. Well, that's a kind of good place for me to kind of shift the conversation a little bit too, because I haven't been on Twitter, you know, like for a few years now. I posted, a friend texted me and was like, hey, you need to post that story you wrote on Twitter. So I've posted a few stories throughout last year or at the end of the year, but like, it feels so toxic to me mm-hmm. at this point that I didn't realize that was kind of the feedback, but it's one of those things that's really interesting because, you know, it is really just a bunch of friends and a bunch of people that just met each other through social media or through message boards way back in the day. And it's not I loved that the group was so diverse. You know, it was like mm-hmm. there's people on there on my trip that, you know, didn't have much of a social following at all. And yet they're still there with the same passion and the same, you know, level of conversation and knowledge. And that was the thing that got me excited about it, you know, but I could see how, you know, the first year that it happened, I knew almost everybody there. And it was like, dang, I didn't get invited. You know, it's hard to not have that feeling, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, of course.
And JT and I talked a little bit about that too, because it's like we all see it happening because we see the people that went, but it was never, I don't think it's ever been anybody's intention, you know, knowing the people that put it on. Like their intentions are to give this experience to as many people as they can. But considering people, you know, that show up there have hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of followers, like you can't possibly provide that experience for everyone all at the same time. Right. So it's a challenge for you. Like, how has that affected, you know, kind of what you do with your photography and just in general, you know, like, because that's a kind of a tough thing to do without having a full-time job of being a teacher. And now, like, you know, with, I'm sorry, I didn't check to see how many followers you have, but
no, you're good.
You're 300,000 or 400,000 at least. I know for sure. So like you were growing really well with all of this, right? And it's been really cool too to see you get the experiences that you've had, you know, just seeing like that you went to All-Star. I don't know if you'd been to All-Star before, but like that was a cool, like I like seeing that as a creative person because it forces your creativity into a very finite amount of time. And that's always a fun thing for me. I say that knowing that I can't stand like 6 second reels and TikToks and stuff, but like the way that people take their creativity and condense it into an experience is always something that I find fascinating, because one thing that like is never talked about on the creative side is like Los Angeles is a massive place. There were like, I want to say hundreds of events going on over the course of the week of All-Star Weekend. And, you know, everybody has friends that are going to certain things, but like, it's so beautiful to see everyone's unique perspective and experience of it for me, because it's just like, I would have not taken that photo. I would have not been looking at that thing in that room with this other thing going on. So for you, how is that like kind of dealing with the negativity, but also obviously, you know, the positive things that have come from it, you know, how has that been for you in this journey to get to this point of having the book finally?
No, it's fun. I mean, I guess like, you know, the more, I guess, recognition you get online, you're going to get, you know, equally as much like hate, I guess, online, but that really doesn't bother me too much. And I'm not the kind of person that's going to be like, yo, like, look at me, I'm kind of a big deal. Like, that's just not my personality. Like, everything that I share online is just like, it's a passion project, right? Like, it's something that I genuinely enjoy. I spend majority of my time in my basement taking pictures because that's what I like to do. Like, some people like playing video games or like watching movies or TV or doing stuff like that. Like, mine is going in my basement, taking photos and editing photos. Like that's what I enjoy doing. So if I enjoy doing it, that's how I share it. That's why I share it with the world, because it's really fun. And I never thought in a million years that, you know, doing something just for fun would turn into the opportunities that I've been able to get. Like, I've been to All-Star once before. It was in Cleveland, I think it was 21, maybe 2021, maybe, I don't know, but it was like right after COVID. So it was kind of like, everyone was just like, kind of apprehensive about events and, you know, like big, you know, activations and stuff. So, I mean, it was cool to go out there and see all that. And then I did All-Star when it was here in Utah in Salt Lake, because, you know, don't have to pay for a hotel. I can sleep in my own bed. It was great. And that was really cool to see how like a place that I was familiar with in Salt Lake hosts all these different things. So that was really cool. But then LA, like that was crazy, because LA is huge. And like you said, there's a bunch of stuff going on all over the place. I was joking with my friends that I kept Uber in business that weekend, because like just bouncing like all these things. So it wasn't like one central spot. Like it was, you're going up to West Hollywood, you're going over to Inglewood, you're going to downtown. Like it's just all over the place, all these events. But it was really cool just to see like how the brands, you know, showcased what they wanted to showcase, because it was all unique. And that was really fun. And then the whole like, and then the book, like that was kind of out of the blue too. I had the idea for a while, because people was like, oh, you should do a book. I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool. It's just like I had no idea how to like go about it. It was like you could look online to see some of those like websites that's like, oh, you can put your photo on a mug or on a calendar or make your own book. But logistically, I don't know if that would work how I want it to work. You know, like, would I have to do that and then order, like, spend tens of thousands of dollars to get copies and then distribute? And then like, what happens if I have all this stuff left over? Like, what am I going to do? So all these, you know, thoughts running through my mind.
Yeah.
And then out of the blue, Familius, the publishing company that I'm working with for this project, I got an email and they pitched me the idea of like, yeah, we would love to do, like, we've seen your stuff online and we think it would be really cool in like a photography coffee table book. So it just happened to work out that way. And they've been really great to work with. Got to pick like the images, the layout, all that stuff. It was really cool to see that. And I mean, they're a publishing company, so they have a whole team of people that deal with all the stuff that I don't have to worry about dealing with, because that would be really stressful. So yeah, it just worked out how I guess it was supposed to work out.
So I remember like that was one of the first things that I messaged you on Instagram about, was like you had posted something, a question about, you know, the book possibility. And I was just looking at that like August of 2024. So
that's crazy.
And because I was looking at the same things, right? Like I think, you know, what I love about sneakers and really any passion that people have for a particular thing is everybody's angle, right? Like it's like if I had the ability, I'd have a, you know, an entire library of books on the wall in my office or in, you know, studio or whatever. And, you know, if there was no limits, like it would just be like, give me a warehouse and I'll just like, I love flipping through. I'm looking forward to flipping through your book. Like, you know, like all of these things are like, it never feels like it's repeating, even though I probably have 50 different sneaker books, you know, or maybe even more at this point. And so like going through the process for me of like looking at those same things was always kind of an interesting, like probably similar things that you were going through, or like, I was thinking the same thing of like, well, you know, my audience for what I want to talk about and what I want to write is going to be definitely different than consumer. It's more like the business side, because I've been really lucky to work on the business side of a lot of these brands and retailers and whatever for years. But how did you like kind of make that connection? Did they reach out? What did that look like for, you know, the process of even getting the deal in place and, you know, the decisions that you had to make doing that? Especially, you know, I think like, you know, as somebody who does not just the photography side, but does, you know, I'm assuming you probably have a lot of personal preferences going into the design aspect of the book even too, that like, maybe I wouldn't think too much about that, where I'm thinking more of the words, you know, is kind of my lane with it. So how did that all start? And like, what was the process like for you?
For sure. You know, and like looking back and I kind of relate it to like my wife and I moving around a bunch of times, because we've moved to a gajillion houses in our lives. And like with each move, we're like, oh man, I wish we would have like not settled for this, or I wish we would have done this different when we move into a different house. And like, since this is my first like project with the book, like there was so much to like wrap my brain around. There's definitely things that like I would want to, if I ever get the opportunity to do another one, to like change or make different, you know, for a different book release. But I think my focus on it was so heavy on like what photos I wanted to put into it. That's what kind of dominated my attention. And again, I think just the intent of providing a good variety of pictures in there that would appeal to everybody. Like I'll have some, you know, some cool Jordans in there. I'll have some older stuff in there. I'll have, you know, stuff from New Balance and Saucony and Adidas. Like I try to give a good variety just to kind of have some diversity, because that's kind of how I am as a sneaker collector. I appreciate the variety that exists amongst brands. Even if it's something like super small and a super like niche collaboration, but if it's a really cool store, I'm like, yeah, that's a fire shoe. Like I want that. Yeah. And so I tried to like pick images that would kind of, you know, portray that in the book, and they would come back and they had some ideas of like layout and stuff. And I just really wanted it to be just simple, because you could spend forever trying to get like things to look really, really like how you want. I was like, no, let's just stick. So it's like, you'll see some pages in the book that are just like, just a picture. That's it. You'll just see picture. You open it up, there's a picture here, which is great. And then some, you'll see a couple pictures on there with maybe like some quotes that have to do with like maybe whoever designed the shoe or stuff like that. But yeah, it was cool to go through that process. Definitely learned some things. Maybe, you know, hopefully I can do another one, because I have some other ideas that I think would be pretty cool to do in a future book if that ever happens.
Nice, man. Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed for it for sure. How long was that process for you of like, you know, now that I'm looking at and seeing 2024 in my Instagram DMs, I'm like,
yeah, no, it took a while.
Yeah,
it did, because I know, like, at least with a publishing company, like, they have their slate of books that they're going to release when they're going to want to release them. And so it was like end of 2024 is when we started, like, kind of talking through the process and identifying pictures and going through revisions and things like that. And then I think everything was done as far as, like, what images we wanted to, like, have in there and, like, cover, and everything was ready to be made beginning of 2025. So it's kind of like, I don't know, waiting for Christmas as a kid, because it's like, I gotta wait a whole year for this to come out and, like,
yeah,
have people see it. Like, it was hard. And then, like, you have the thought in the back of your mind too, because, like, between the beginning of 2025 when we finalized it, so now I've taken a ton of pictures, and it's like, oh man, I wish I could have, like, put this one in there and put this one in there and put this one in there, you know. But, you know, it's, I'm just happy with it still. Like, it's really cool. I got my copy in, and it's just really neat to just flip through something. Cause, like, you know, it's different when you look at something on your phone,
yeah,
versus when you're, like, physically able to touch the pages and, like, you know, see things differently, engage a few more of those senses instead of just, you know, scrolling.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's something that I don't know if it's an age thing for me, but I've been feeling it a lot more in the last 3, 4, or 5 years. Could have been a part of COVID too, but just the idea of, I've created so much stuff that is, you know, literally could be deleted with a keystroke. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been really lucky to have contributed to a handful of magazines over the years and featured in magazines back in the day, you know, like, for my collection. But, like, all of those were, like, works that were, like, just, I was included in, right? So, like, it's always one of those things where, like, what is... You know, it's like, how do I go down that path without too much ego and be like, when do I get to do my thing? Right. And I wonder, right, like, what that aspect of it was like too for you, because it's a heavy lift to create something as substantial as the book is. Right. I don't know if you said how many photos, but, like, it's a big book from what I can tell. So, like, there's a lot of work that goes into that. Even if you had a lot of that work as in photos taken already, I mean, I'm assuming your workflow for photography is not just like a one and done when a shoe is up, right? You're, like, probably taking dozens every time, and mm-hmm. then it's like refining from there. So how do you think of that in your creative process when it comes to, you know, I guess, like, social posts or the book, kind of a similar line there, or different tangents of a same line kind of.
Yeah, you know, and for me, it's just like my process is all like, okay, if there's a pair of shoes that I want to take pictures of, I don't set a number in my head of like, oh, I want to get this many pictures of this shoe. I'll just get that shoe and then I'll think about it for a second. And then I just start messing around with, you know, ideas and poses and things like that. And then ideas will come there on the spot, and then we'll just run with it. And however many photos I end up getting. Some are a little bit more, like, thought out, when, like, if I have a shoe where I'm like, ooh, that would be really cool if I include, like, these props or, you know, this thing with it. So I'll like plan those out a little bit, maybe look on Amazon and order whatever stuff I need to order to try and, you know, do the shoot. That way, those ones are fun when those ideas come and pop off. So it's just, I don't know, the process is just, if I have an idea for a shoe, go in and execute that idea however I see fit. And then once, like, I'm like, okay, I think I got enough, I think we're good, then I'll do my thing, edit them, I'll share them online and share my thoughts and sentiment. And then I move on to the next thing, another shoe. Usually it's the shoe that I wore that day, or if there's a pair that's, like, in my basement, I'm like, man, I haven't looked at that shoe in a while. I'm going to look at that shoe. And I look at that shoe, I'm like, this shoe is really freaking cool. I want to take some pictures of this shoe. And then you just kind of, you know, do that. And then kind of the same process of picking pictures for the book is, I went through my massive Google Drive with all of the photos in there and just looked through. And as I was looking through those photos, I was like, oh yeah, I remember, like, this one. It's like, oh yeah, I spilled something right here on my backdrop during this photo and really screwed that one up, but this photo turned out really good. Or like, oh, that's the one where my, you know, this stand fell down and broke my computer, you know, things like that, like those little things. So it was kind of rewarding for me to, like, go down my own memory of how I created those, and just kind of like, oh yeah, I remember doing that, or I remember when I figured out how to do that, like, that was cool, or I remember the, like, this first attempt at trying to, you know, make a shoe float. And then now look where I'm at making shoe floats. Like,
yeah,
it's fun to go back and look at some of the older stuff and see how things have progressed and grown since then.
Yeah, there's probably a little bit of when that light stand fell and broke your computer. There's probably a little bit of, I don't know if reward is the right word, but there's probably a little bit of satisfaction that comes with like putting that photo in the book too, because you're like, okay, well now it was worth losing the laptop or the computer, right?
Right. It's like, now that photo's in a book, so it's okay. It was just a laptop.
Do you have like a, you know, you kind of mentioned like a Google Drive, but like, do you have like a thought process when it comes to even organizing the photos that you take? Or, you know, because part of what I think a lot of people, if they aren't struggling with it yet, they will at some point. As a creative person, you end up having so much stuff that you work on, right? And, you know, whether that's words or photography or videos or whatever. And, you know, you can look at the cloud-based storage business and be like, yeah, there's literally trillions of dollars worth of stuff that we probably don't look at again. But for me, like in the last, you know, maybe 6 months or so, I've really been trying to think about the way I like go back and organize, because essentially we're kind of all stuck on this situation where it's like, we've maybe like moved things to a hard drive, or it's like, okay, well now I've got to pay for more storage on the cloud of Google or Apple or whatever you use. Do you have like a thought process for that when you're kind of, whether it's after the photo shoot or even within that you kind of take a creative like overview with?
So for me, I have to be, or like, I don't know, I'm just one of those people that's meticulous about the way I organize things. So I'll have my folders set up in my Google Drive by year. So it's like, okay, like say, okay, 2021, click on that folder. And in that folder, I don't have any other folders. I just have like each name of like the shoe, like I'll have the exact name of the shoe, in the year of the shoe in like the name of the file. So like, if I go and say, it's like, okay, I want to find those, 2000 Laney fives. It's like, I remember the year that I shot it. I'll go to that year and then I'll just type in like Laney five, and then it'll like show all the pictures that I took with the Laney five. And then I can go through and, you know, get those ones how I want. So that's a system that works for me, is just using like years. And then within each year that I take the photos, I have the exact name of the shoe and whatever year the shoe is in that file name. So it's just really easy to just do a quick search for any of that stuff. Or even like, I'll just search the one folder that has everything in it. And so say maybe I've taken a picture of the Laney five, you know, 3 years in a row, and then I can type in Laney five, and then there's the whole like slew of all of the pictures there. And then I'm also like kind of worried about like one day like the cloud storage stuff will crash and like maybe I'll never have access to that ever again. I have my stuff backed up on I can't tell you how many hard drives, just because like that's just, you know, the life of a photographer. You worry about like you're gonna lose your work, or you're gonna lose a picture that you took 10 years ago that, you know, it's really not that big of a deal, but you're worried about it and you got to take care of it. So, yeah. So I use cloud storage for like my daily, just the quick access stuff. But then I always back stuff up to the hard drive whenever I'm like, yeah, I should probably back stuff up to the hard drive.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of find myself doing like a little bit of both and like never really committing to one or the other, unfortunately. So like, I have I just like the last few years I've used a pretty substantial NAS setup. So I have like a, you know, like a server at the house that just kind of holds everything.
Yeah.
But also I haven't taken the time to go back and find and get all the old hard drives onto it. So like, there's like a good 5 year, 4 to 5 year window of I know where everything is at. And then there's like a good 10 years of who knows, like, kind of. So I'm kind of trying to figure out what that looks like for me. So that was a very personal question for, you know, to ask.
Lost some stuff because I used to. So back when I started teaching, they gave us unlimited Google Drive space for teachers. I was like, this is great. I'm going to put everything on here, you know. And then I want to say 6-7 years later, get an email from like the district's like, you have been identified as one of the high users on Google Drive. And I was like, yeah, I know. Yeah. So it's like, we need you to downsize because we're only able to have this much amount. Now I'm like, okay, crap. So like trying to migrate from my school account, Google Drive, to like my personal one now, some stuff got lost. I can't even tell you what stuff, like some older like pictures and stuff that, you know, like my family things got lost, but yeah. I have it on like my Google Photos somewhere. So it's like, I need to just like one day get everything in the same spot and refine it all. Cause it's on hard drives, or it's on like a Google Photos account, or it's on like backed up into iCloud somewhere. So it's in all these places. I just need to like consolidate it again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a first world problem for us all going forward. Right. Like, I feel like we're all just going to deal with that, because even just like the amount of photos that are on my phone on a regular basis that are, I don't say meaningless, but they are like, just, you know, I have photos of my dog because she was being cute for the billionth time today, you know? So like sending that to my girl, and like all those things where it's just like, it'll be fun and it pops up occasionally and it's fun to see it again. But it's like, so, you know, it wasn't like there was no effort in it. Right. It was just like, I just want to snap this moment. But then like you do that for 10 years or however long we're going to have these things. And it's like, well, I remember I took this photo of this thing at maybe somewhere, and like you spend hours trying to find this one moment, you know? Yeah, exactly.
So, oh my gosh,
it's gonna be an interesting, there's gonna be some, I'm sure there will be some technology that comes along that helps us a little bit more. There's a few of them out there that do some work, but you mentioned like, you know, like the family photos and even starting the photography, you know, kind of more on the family photo side of things. What has been like the kind of takeaways from your experience in the photography stuff? Are you a Canon user, you know, Sony user? Are you exploring different things, or are you kind of one of those people that's like, I got the thing that works for me, and try to avoid the, you know, the gear acquisition syndrome that you see on social media so much?
No, man, it's always enticing to chase like the latest and greatest when it comes to photography stuff. But so when I first started, my first camera that I messed around with was like a little tiny Canon, like PowerShot, like, I mean, like the little cameras that are this big. Yep. It's got the one lens, got the big screen on the back. That was fun for what it was. And then like from there, I bought a Sony. And so that was my first camera that had interchangeable lenses. I think one of Sony's first, like in their like resurgence of like their mirrorless cameras and putting interchangeable lenses on there. And that camera was great. I still have it. Sometimes I let my 11-year-old son, you know, mess around with it, which is kind of fun. And then from there, like, I've stayed with Sony because the lenses, right? It's expensive to like try to go to a different system and get new lenses. So I've stuck with Sony, still with it. Right now I currently shoot with a Sony A7 R4. I think they're on like the 5 or the 6 now. I don't know. It works for what I have.
Yeah.
I have all the lenses that I want. So it's like, I'm not in a, you know, a gear like junkie, you know, it's like, oh, I need to get a new body. I need to get this latest and greatest lens. It's like, no, what I got's great. And until like I either break it or something like completely groundbreaking comes along, then I'll be fine.
Yeah, totally. It's such an easy slippery slope, man, to get trapped, you know, in, because you start to look and see all the things that everything proclaims to do. And, you know, it's like 99% of what all of us do don't need near as much as what we're willing to buy into and hope that it does.
Yeah, it's like when the new phones come out, and it's like, oh, yeah, it's exactly. better because it's better. And like, I want that.
Yeah.
It's like, nah, really, the only reason I ever upgrade my phone is because the battery sucks. And it's like, I just need a new phone because my battery's trash. So.
Yeah, my phone upgrades are usually about every 4 or 5 years at this point, versus like, you know, I think the technology is cool, and you see some, you know, like there's like one or two features of a phone that like, okay, I would like to have that. But then you look at the prices of them and like, I don't know, it's like, it's not really worth that. Like, it's not going to change your life. I will say that, like, I don't know if you've like used, and I was just talking to another friend about this, so it's on my mind this morning, but the DJI Osmo Pocket, you know, the camera that everybody basically has as a vlogging.
Like, yeah.
That camera's like the only camera that I've bought. So I shoot on Canon.
Okay.
Well, I started on Nikon, very like heavily into Nikon, like the early 2000s. And I got to the point where like I wanted to create video. I wanted to do stuff. I wanted to be able to shoot video for some of the work that I was doing. And I, like you said, never wanted to make a switch because I had spent so much on the Nikon stuff before. And their video has just always been, I mean, they seem to be doing good now, but like they were so far behind when Sony started coming up and Canon kind of took on the like autofocus stuff. So I made a switch to Canon, you know, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago now, but I upgraded like my main camera. I don't know when it was, 4 years ago now, whatever it was, but like have an R6 Mark II, and it's a great camera. It doesn't do anything like drastically different than the camera I was using prior to that, other than like obviously shooting way higher megapixels.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
a few of the focus things are like better for me for like doing podcasts or shooting stuff. But then like whenever that Osmo 3 came out, it was like, okay, I'm gonna try this. I couldn't justify buying it really, and then I did. And like it just, to your point, kind of going back to the sneaker thing, it made it fun again. It was like, what is this? Like, how has this been missing from our lives? And I can't explain that other than like the phones never feel that way to me. Like phones never feel like I'm getting this fun new experience with it because it's always packaged the same. And I had like the little stick cameras and played with them for a little bit. And I'm not like doing anything spectacular with any of these cameras anyway, but it was just like one of those moments where like kind of got me back excited about camera stuff again for the first time in a long time too, which is really interesting kind of to parallel the sneaker conversation. But I was wondering, like, I guess like kind of one of my last questions for you in regards to the photography stuff and the creative stuff, being that you kind of sounds like you come more from a design background than a photography background. I'm generalizing, of course, but do you find that you do more work for your photos pre or post production? And how do you look at that part of it? Because I don't think people realize the amount of editing that goes into a lot of, of the amazing photos you take. And I'd love for you to kind of talk a little bit about that.
For sure. There's a lot. And I think it all depends on like the photo. Some photos are very intricate to set up, especially if I'm using like, you know, additional like props or things in there to, you know, tell a story through some of the photos. Like for example, one of my favorite photo sets that I took was of the Unheard of Piggy Runners, the pink ones. And I got like little heart candies and did like all of that stuff. My oldest son came up with that idea and I was like, that's awesome. Like, let's run it. Ordered bulk heart candies on Amazon, ordered way too much. But yeah, that took some time to set up some of those shots because like I wanted to make one that like looked like a heart. So it was like trying to get all these little candy hearts and like, you know, using my hands to like get everything looking like a heart and then doing that forever.
Yeah.
But then normally when I'm doing just, you know, studio backdrop, stuff like that, if it's just something that's not like floating or having anything suspended, photo setup, really simple. You know, I'll set the photo up, I'll get my lighting where I want, and then I'll take the picture. And then the majority of the editing process, I got like lighting and all of that stuff dialed in for, you know, whatever color backdrop I'm using. I have all my little presets saved and Lightroom that I've made that way. But the majority of my editing is just cleaning dust and dirt and random things off of the paper backdrop. So that's we got a random student behind me there. Cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's majority of it is just cleaning up the backdrop, making it look smoother and less dirty like my basement.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it depends on the photo. Cool props, cool setup definitely takes longer pre-production. But then if it's just a normal like studio photo, it majority of the time is spent in post to get the backdrop all cleaned up.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of part of photography that I think isn't talked about much in the, I mean, obviously it's talked about in the photography world, but not in the, like, you know, in this example, the sneaker world, right? Like people don't think about that as much because they're scrolling past it or they're, you know, seeing it in Instagram and they don't think of the work that goes into it because, you know, like I've been shooting a bunch of stuff on a black acrylic, you know, to give that like reflection.
Yeah.
You know, like, and there's so much post-processing that goes into that because ultimately I'll knock something onto it and scratch it, or I've got like dust or whatever, or the background that I want isn't popping the right way. But I wish there was more, I guess, transparency specifics into the nuance of like sneaker photography, you know? So sure. With your book, I think like, I hope people can like see those things and think about all the stuff that went into it too, right? As they're flipping through it, because that's one of the things that like we all kind of have been segmented into these like, you know, this is what you're into and this is what Instagram shows you every day. But it's like the work behind it to me is always the fascinating part that I'm like, how do I get to like, I want to stand in the studio while this is happening, while this person's creating their magic. Like, that's where I want to be, you know? So I'm looking forward to the book. I guess like give everybody the details one more time. Sure. and let them know how they can find you and pre-order it too.
For sure. So again, title of the book is called The Art of the Sneaker. You can find it, I guess, just go to my Instagram and it's in my bio. There's a link there for pre-order. You can buy it. And I guess people who pre-ordered a while ago are already starting to get the pairs before it launches on, or get the pairs, wow, not sneakers, get the book, before March 24th. March 24th is official launch day. And then it should be available on the publisher's website, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all those bookstores will have it available.
Cool, cool, man. Well, congrats again. Thanks for coming on to chat with me about it. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it, and I'll be crossing my fingers and sending some hopes and prayers for you to get that second one too, so we can get the 2025 and 2026 runs coming on.
Absolutely, man. No, I appreciate you having me on. It was fun to catch up.
Of course, man. Good talking with you. Thanks everybody for tuning in, listening. Make sure you hit the links to Andy's social to get the books. Catch you in the next one. Peace. Hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. If you want more insights into the sneaker world, I've started a newsletter called the Sneaker Newsletter to share my knowledge of over 2 decades experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link below or go to thesneakernewsletter.com. Last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.